Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Let me give you some reasons why you should go to purdyinsurance.com. First of all, let's start with what your needs are. Auto, home, life, business. I think all of you fall into at least one of those categories, if not multiple. You want to be properly insured, all right? Well, your agent at Purdy is going to make sure that they find exactly the right insurance so you're covered in exactly the right way. Boy, you'd like to save a few dollars if you could. Well, they're going to do everything they can to look across every possible avenue to get you the best price on that insurance. And if there's ever a need to update, they'll update. If there's ever a need for a claim, they will go to work for you ASAP because customer service means everything to them. You want to talk about good people, starting with, you know, you got Adam Purdy, Steve Engel. I mean, go through the whole list of the great people that work there that just really care. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Talk about caring. Great people at Sunbury Motors. Great product, great sales staff, incredible service department. It is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In a few moments, Jacob Bogich will join us, the national sports writer for the Washington Post, to talk about the Women's World Cup. And speaking of which, J.P. Delacamera and Allie Wagner with the call. Rose Lavelle with the shot that puts it away.
Mewis, Lavelle, Rose up the middle, looking, cutting, shooting, goal! Lavelle, 2-0 the U.S.
And that is the bread and butter of Rose Lavelle. When she can get him behind that midfield line and drive at the back line, Alex Morgan was making a really straight run, so she was running out of options, and then she just sizes up her favorite left foot, puts that out of reach of Van Veenendaal, who's been fantastic in this game, but can't get anything on that. Perfectly placed and enough power to glance it by and tuck it into the back post.
The biggest goal of Rose Lavelle's life.
And that made it 2-0 after, this is after Megan Rapinoe had scored on a penalty kick. Rapinoe was ultra cool on that, took care of it, and the U.S. won the World Cup 2-0. Jacob Bogich now joins us, national sports writer for the Washington Post. We've talked to Jacob about this before. Welcome back, my friend. Great to have you with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the equal pay part, and then we'll actually get to the team itself. I know they filed a lawsuit. The suit was filed on March 28th. In the end, what do you think their odds are of eventually working this out without having to go to a courtroom?
Yeah, it really depends on the judge. In situations like this, they like to send the parties back and say, I am now forcing you to work on this and mediate yourselves. And if you don't have any progress, then you come to me. It really depends on A, what the judge's take is on this, and B, how much pressure the U.S. Soccer Federation now feels, given that these women have dominated on the world stage and they've generated this kind of conversation. And there seems to be a ton of public goodwill behind them.
Jacob, the TV ratings, it appears to me, are much better for the women's game. They win, as opposed to the occasional men's appearance when they play. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd also have to judge on what if the men qualified for the World Cup, what the buzz would be. But that's a hypothetical, right? I mean, the men did not qualify for the World Cup. The men are not as good. The men are perhaps decades away from achieving this kind of consistent success that the women's program has had from its inception. So the women's ratings are better, and they should revel in that.
In fact, I would say that on the surface, in the last 20 years, they've done more for the overall participation in soccer across the country. They've done more than the men have in this country. In this country,
yeah,
not around the world, but in this country.
You could certainly argue that. I mean, ask your average sports fan who they can name on this team, right?
Right.
And they can name Megan Rapinoe, and I'm sure they could name Alex Morgan and maybe Julie Ertz. I mean, I don't know. There's name recognition here.
Exactly.
I don't know that the name recognition for this men's team exists anymore with all of the ups and downs that they've been through and the fact that they cannot qualify. They cannot say they are among the world's best.
All right. This team is now, they've had 8 World Cups. This team, the U.S. national team, has won 4 of them, including back-to-back. The World Cup was held in France. What did you think it did for the overall women's game in the continent of Europe to have it in France? And is there a closing of the gap with the U.S.?
Yes and yes. So to have this game in France, they played the final in Lyon. The best women's soccer team in Europe is in Lyon. Olympique Lyon, they invest in this game. They get sell-out crowds. They sell jerseys. People watch on TV. It's very successful. We've seen the game develop throughout Europe in the Women's Bundesliga, in the Women's Premier League in Europe. And now we're seeing the NWSL here at home gain some traction as well. Repeat the second part, the first part of your question.
Yeah, and is there a potential closing of the gap now between where the U.S. has been the last 4 years? Is there a closing of the gap with some other teams because now there's more interest in their country in the game?
Undoubtedly. I think we saw England play exceptionally well. We saw France play exceptionally well. The Netherlands with the 2017 European champions. Sweden. I mean, can you believe Sweden was fun to watch at some point?
Yeah.
I definitely think there's a narrowing of the gap. A lot of this will depend on what these players can go do out now in their professional seasons, and who wants to still keep track of them. Who wants to watch, in my area, the Washington Spirit? Who wants to watch the Rain with the G, the Rain in the NWSL that Megan Rapinoe plays for? Who wants to keep up with these players, and how much can they hold on to this recognition?
All right, when it comes to the national team, the next time up in terms of national recognition will be the Olympics in Tokyo coming up. Megan Rapinoe, I want to say, is 34. Carly Lloyd, who had been critical in 15, was a late-game sub. And took on that role. Allie Krieger played the second half. I want to say Allie's 33 or 34 now. Where is this team as you look over the next 4 years, because some of the critical parts are a bit older now?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this earlier today. We might not see Becky Sauerbrunn again.
Yes.
Julie Ertz played a tremendous World Cup, but I forget how old she is. I don't know how much she has, and I'm not trying to use this pejoratively, I just don't know what her longevity is.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if we didn't see Megan Rapinoe again. It wouldn't surprise me if we didn't see Carly Lloyd or Alex Morgan again. But then you look at the depth on this team. Samantha Mewis was a revelation.
Right.
Rose Lavelle was terrific and scored kind of the insurance goal. Lindsay Horan didn't even play in the final.
Right.
And she was great. Kristen Press came off the bench a number of times and started in place of Megan Rapinoe that one match against England. Dahl Kemper on the back line is still relatively young. There's Alyssa Nair. You know, she's going to be
She's 30,
a household name at some point.
Right.
You know, because she's brand new and she was tremendous. There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of depth. And just because we start to see some new names, I don't know that that's cause for fans to worry about the quality of play.
Right. No, it's just interesting. I mean, because a lot of times it's usually been, quote, an older player that has taken the reins and has been, you know, look, that's in every sport. It just seems that the more experience you have, the better it is along the way. You talk about Alyssa Nair, she's Penn Stater, along with Allie Krieger, so very important around here. She was thought to be a concern going in. Did she answer all those questions in your mind?
And then some. She grew into that role tremendously. I mean, I remember when we talked before the World Cup.
Yeah.
And our conversation was, they are going to score more than anyone else. And, right. You know, if someone gets one or two past them, then their game plan is we're going to get three or four past you.
Right.
And instead, they pitched a shutout in a lot of these crucial games. And that's thanks to Alyssa Nair, who made some big saves. I mean, the penalty kick that she stopped in the semifinal, I mean, that's huge. And the way the back line came together. Crystal Dunn was fantastic. Dahl Kemper was fantastic. They really gelled well. The communication was great. You saw Joe Ellis go to kind of a back five instead of a back four late in games,
yep.
Where Julie Ertz dropped back, and that really gave them another touch of experience and just, you know, a seasoned veteran to, you know, punt the ball out of there and salt the clock down. But a lot of that is Alyssa Nair taking charge, feeling herself on the world stage.
You brought up the name Jill Ellis during that answer, Jacob, so I want to ask you about her. Look, if you're going to be the manager, you're going to be somebody that's going to get your fair share of criticism along the way. It's just part of the makeup of the job. She certainly had every single decision questioned as time went. In the end, what would your report card look like in the job she's done?
A+. She pulled the string with this team. She seemed like she knew every personality inside and out. She seemed like she knew every skill set inside and out. She seemed like she had all the fitness inside and out. When Megan Rapinoe subbed out in that quarterfinal match at the end of the game, you kind of looked at her and went, wow, what a game. But she is gassed. And then they gave her the next one off. And she played the final on like a week's rest or something and then scores the penalty and created a million chances. You know, in late in games when they had to salt the clock away, Carly Lloyd is fantastic at that. Fantastic at maintaining possession, strong on the ball, smart with the ball. She knew this team better than anyone gave her credit for. She knew the fitness, she knew the conditioning, she knew the game IQ. I mean, it was a masterclass. It was like Popovich-esque.
Popovich-esque. Very good. I think she'd take that as a compliment.
I think Greg would take it as a compliment, too, to say he's Ellis-esque.
Actually, yes. I think he would, as a matter of fact. One final question. You talked about going back to the respective pro teams. In your area, is there, quote, a lot of interest in it? Is there a demand to write about it? Is there a demand to see it there?
It's growing, and it's growing because of the quality of play. No one can deny the quality of play around in the NWSL is subpar or is not as exciting or whatever it may be. Mallory Pugh and Rose Lavelle play for the local team here, the Washington Spirit.
Okay.
They just won a World Cup. They are the best at their respective positions in the world. Mallory Pugh only played one match in the World Cup. When you're that good, you kind of demand to be talked about. And you can imagine, you know, all the little boys and girls who watched these games on television over summer break, and now they find out that these two play in my backyard. You know, it's hard to keep audiences away when the quality is so unimpeachable. And so we'll see if there's carryover. But I know in recent years it's grown, and I think it will continue to grow.
Always appreciate your time very much, Jacob. It's great to talk with you about this and many other topics.
Good to be with you. Thanks so much.
Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Thought Jacob made some very interesting points during that. We'll get more on it coming up in a few minutes. In the final half hour of the show today. And we're also at the All-Star break. Will you watch the All-Star game tomorrow night? Sean's thinking about it.
I will for a little bit. I always like to watch the first couple of innings because you may get a you may get a pitching hitting matchup that you may normally won't. You know, you may have to wait till the postseason to see.
Maybe, but there's so much interleague play now.
Yeah, true.
That's why I think in the end they're going to go to the DH in both leagues. Because I think there's so much interleague play right now that there is something to having the two leagues being different in approach. Okay, there is something to that. I will concede that. I have been a big DH person since the day it started. When Ron Bloomberg came to the plate and Orlando Cepeda came to the plate, I'm sorry, I'd rather watch Orlando Cepeda hit than Louis Tiant. I also think that it puts a higher value. American League starters, to me, have a higher value than National League starters. Doesn't mean an American League starter is better, but I put a higher value on it because I think they have to work harder to get through a lineup than a National League starter does. National League starter can sit there and play whatever game they want to play with the number eight hitter because they're not really pitchers are not really a great threat as hitters. They just aren't. If you're going to sit there and you're going to tell me you're excited to watch a pitcher hit in a game, I'm going to look at you and tell you, you are an absolute liar.
Well, it's like over the weekend with the Phillies-Mets series and seeing Jake Arrieta go up to the plate. I mean, granted, he got a hit. Then we find out he has a bone spur, but it's like you don't want to see him at bat. You'd rather see him pitch.
Well, I mean, again, if you tell me that you're excited to watch a pitcher hit in a Major League Baseball game, I will look at you straight out and say, you know what? You're a liar. I know you're trying to and I'm always sick of the, it's not the Manhattan Project. Oh, the strategy in the National League is so much more. Okay, no offense, but a Little League manager can make a double switch. So let's not pretend this is the Manhattan Project here. Right? Here's strategy for you. Nobody out. Eighth place hitter gets a base hit. What do you think the pitcher's going to do here? I think he might bunt. What do you think, Sean?
Swing for the fences? No.
Hit and run? No. Strike out? Maybe.
The goal, at least get to first base so the bad boy can bring out the jacket for the pitcher.
Yeah. Look, in the minor leagues, pitchers aren't hitting up until double A. And even in double A, they're only hitting half the time. They're facing an American League team. Like, say, for example, Redding's playing Portland. The games in Portland, they're DHing it. So these pitchers are not hitting. They're not hitting at all before they get to there anywhere. Not one time have I ever seen a pitcher hit in the 14 years I've broadcast the New York Penn League. I haven't seen a pitcher hit one time. They don't take batting practice. So in other words, they go through an entire year in the New York Penn League, they don't take batting practice. They don't take batting practice at Palm Beach. They don't take batting practice in Peoria. They don't take batting practice in Johnson City. Well, that's four levels of the organization. They don't take any batting practice in the Gulf Coast League. That's five levels of minor league ball that you're not taking batting practice in. I haven't even mentioned them hitting in a game yet. They don't even take batting practice. Now suddenly you want them to hit in a game on the major league level? I mean, I think the batting average for a pitcher in the major leagues right now is 156.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Home, auto, life, business, whatever the insurance needs happen to be, they'll find you the right insurance, the best price. And they'll cover you every step of the way. They've got your back. Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Yaron Weitzman joins us, NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Yaron, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So if we go back a couple of months, what I always find interesting about shows such as these is that I'd say 90-plus percent have no connections at all to people, teams, leagues, things like that, all right? Which means they're not in touch with anybody. You're in touch with people.
Okay.
So there's a lot of a lot of talk for there's a lot of talk, for example, about, well, the Knicks are going to get this and the Lakers are going to get that. And in the end, that didn't happen. All right? And so if you're listening to shows such as these, oh, this could happen, that could happen, and Sean knows I don't go down that road. My connections are in a different area. In the end, do you feel like they ended up with a far more balanced league because of free agency just in 8 days?
A far more balanced league? Yeah, I think it's kind of cool, right? I haven't looked it up. I'd be curious to look up down the Vegas odds historically where they rank in terms of how many teams kind of have decent odds to win the title. But, you know, I know Golden State lost and the LeBron Heat lost a few times. But, you know, entering those seasons between Golden State and between the Heat, LeBron, Wade, Bosh Heat. This is the first time in, I don't know, maybe 8 years, whatever the math is, where you kind of enter the season and it's kind of like you don't know who the favorite is. I think the Clippers officially are, but I mean, sure. Like, why are they ahead of the Lakers or the Bucks or Sixers or whoever else you want to put there? So, yeah, it's been fun. It's interesting. I'm really excited for this upcoming NBA season for that very reason.
Okay, let's go with this now, Yaron. Why not New York as a destination? I mean, Brooklyn's another borough, but it's not Manhattan.
No, it's not. And I, you know, I joke, half joking. You know, I grew up in New York. I live in New York. I know one Mets fan, right? Like literally one. I think people around the NBA, he's maybe not even a big Mets fan anymore. I always joke that, you know, basketball fans around the country or world, I guess now, find the Mets more interesting than people in actual Brooklyn. So yeah, it's a bit strange. I think part of it, and I guess it goes twofold, right? The Nets, as everyone who's interested in this stuff knows and following, they've had this really impressive rebuild. Sean Marks, Kenny Atkinson, they got both slow, smart, savvy move. Assets, their players were good, so they made the playoffs last year, so they were showing guys. It wasn't just, hey, we have young guys who could maybe be good. It's, hey, we have young guys who literally made the playoffs last year and even won a playoff game. That helps. There's also the opposite part about it in terms of from the Knicks end, where it's just, I put the Andre Iguodala in the comments from CNBC, and I know it's Andre Iguodala, and people maybe think she was just promoting a book, but when he says, and Andre Iguodala is one of these players who's been around for a while, and he says nobody wants to play for the Knicks, I think that's something that the Knicks have to really look at, and I think that's kind of telling, and I think it goes really back to James Dolan and the idea of the reputation is out. Everyone's aware of how things go there and how things operate and how it's kind of a bit of a crazy place. And we saw with Porzingis when he asked out. We're seeing it now. The Knicks are just not. It's not even that they didn't get the guys. It's that they didn't get meetings with the guys. And then the guys went to New York anyway, but went to a different team.
Right. They're, for some reason, they are not, quote, a destination franchise. All right. So now let's get to the Lakers and LeBron. Is there anything at all your own? You know, based on your context, is there anything at all to the theory that in reality people don't want to play on the same team with LeBron? I mean, Davis is going to be there, but it seemed like everybody else said, nah, I think I'll find my own spot. Is there anything to that theory at all? Because he's a distributor.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Well, when you say he's a distributor, it's, yeah, no, for sure. And there are some guys who thrive next to him, and you know, guys who have, I'll say, made careers. Maybe that's the wrong phrase. But I'm thinking of like guys like Mike Miller, J.R. Smith, where they're professional, but LeBron, they fit well with him, right? And there's definitely a certain guy who's fit well with him and who's meshed with. He's definitely really hard to play with. I mean, I could tell you, my colleague Rick Bucher wrote something about this earlier this year where I think, I don't remember the exact quote, but even Durant talked about this, and he got a bunch of players on the record to talk about why playing with LeBron is difficult and how kind of he sucks up a lot of the oxygen. Also, so it's that there's a microscope on the team. It's that LeBron is a really demanding teammate, and he's a bit passive aggressive. I think people know that. We've seen that with guys like Kevin Love and stuff like that, where he's gone along with them. But it's definitely, you know, I guess I'll put it like this: LeBron teams don't sit around, hold hands, and sing kumbaya, right? There's definitely they a little more tense there. So it's interesting, right? Because what you're saying is true. Like, it's basketball wise. Playing with him would be great, you would think. He passes the ball, he finds the open, you know, you can fit with him. But he's demanding, and he also does it, I guess we should add, he clearly, I mean, we've seen this in his career, rookies are clearly, or young players are clearly not players he wants to play with or necessarily has much patience for, right? His teams are always trading draft picks, they're never bringing in young guys. I would guess that's not a coincidence in terms of what kind of things how demanding he is and what he expects from his teammates. He's not going to take those kind of mistakes.
How difficult, Yaron, is it in your business to ever read what Kawhi Leonard will or will not do along the way, and the fact that his entourage is not a big group of talkers either?
It's impossible, and that's why I say, I mean, I'm at Summer League, you know, I was talking about with some colleagues about this, and like, it's okay to say, I don't know, right? When people say, what's he going to do? It's okay to say, I don't know, I don't have a read on him, I don't have, you know, his circle of type, we don't know. And that's okay, because in the end, none of us didn't know, right? None of us. We've been wrong about Kawhi for how many years now? Four, right? We all just labeled him the Tim Duncan 2.0 heir apparent to the Spurs. Quiet, going to go along with that, can't do what the Spurs want. Clearly, we were wrong about that, right? He blew that up. He wanted to leave. So we were wrong about that. We think he's going to go to Toronto. He wants to play by himself. We were wrong about that. Not only does he not want to play by himself, he's now the guy recruiting other guys. We're learning, and you know, we learn now, right? He's calling Kevin Durant. He's calling Paul George. He's calling Kyrie Irving. That is something that we all would have said, oh, that's not him. It's okay. We don't know him. And I think that's kind of fun and exciting and cool, right? It's like he's clearly this different kind of player. He's upended the league, and it's fascinating. And I find him and his kind of story within the NBA one of the more fascinating ones we've seen, really, in a few years, aside from LeBron, right? But yeah, in terms of for me and colleagues, yeah, you know, and I think it's a good test for people to say, you know what, this is what I know, this is what I don't, and you can kind of, it's okay to admit that we don't know everything about him.
Paul George goes from Oklahoma City, where, you know, I both know that Russell Westbrook you know, he's much better with the ball in his hands. Now to going to the Clippers with Kawhi. How do you feel about the fit? Because fit means everything when you're putting something together. How do you feel about the fit with George and with Leonard in with the Clippers and with Doc Rivers?
I absolutely love it. I think Paul George is great. I think his best role in all offense is kind of a 1A guy, right?
Yeah.
He's a really good shooter, really good spot-up shooter, maybe running some secondary pick-and-roll, stuff like that, carrying the offense at first. But I don't know if he's your top scorer, your top offensive option. I don't know if that's going to get you deep into the playoffs. As a 1A guy next to Kawhi, fantastic. The two of them, I mean, good luck guarding. Good luck trying to score against that, those two on the perimeter, right? And George and Kawhi, you know, let's say Kawhi's a better defender. You want Kawhi in the top guy in the end of games, or we'll call him, you know, playoff crunch time. Paul George can help with that, right? He can take a guy for two quarters. Kawhi can take him to the floor, stuff like that. I think that fits fantastic. It's also, I mean, it's interesting. They have similar backgrounds, too. I don't know if this doesn't really play into fit, but the idea they're both from that same area. They both went to mid-major. They're both under-recruited. They were drafted around the same spot. It's an interesting, the arcs there are similar. It's clearly, I think the fit's going to be fantastic. And you throw Patrick Beverley there in terms of one of the best defensive point guards in the league, and that perimeter defense is going to be unbelievable.
Sometimes you can get better and you don't really make any moves because you like what you have and you think it's going to get a year older. Does Denver fit into that category?
I mean, I guess they hope, right? For one, they hope. There is certainly something to that, the idea of continuity, and especially with when your guys are young, right? So then you're betting on two things, essentially. You're betting on continuity. That's going to lead to growth, and that age and kind of maturity and improvement skills will lead to growth. So to kind of put those two together, there's room for a leap there. I mean, Denver's whole thing now, Jokic is great, right? Jamal Murray and Viv gave a big contract, and I guess they had to. You can argue about it. It's kind of their fate whether they're going to one day be a contender or whether they're going to be, I'll call it like a really good, you know, Portland Trailblazers type level. You know, 50 wins, maybe make the conference finals. 50 wins regularly, maybe make the conference finals once or two or twice. That will likely depend on how good Jamal Murray becomes. We'll see.
Okay, so now let's get to Utah. Utah did make a move. They made a couple moves.
Yeah.
One of them was getting Mike Conley. What has that now done for Utah's profile and what appears to be a stacked West?
It's changed everything. Before, I mean, I would have, you know, I'm in Las Vegas. I may or may not have looked at some odds before the Kawhi deal in terms of Utah winning the championship. With Mike Conley, I mean, that's exactly what they needed, right? Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, we're talking about Paul George and, you know, 1A guy. I'm not fully comparing them, but in terms of the guys in the playoffs who you kind of see that the full offensive load is a bit too much for them. In a crunch time situation in the playoffs. Donovan Mitchell, we saw that last year. He's also really young. We hope he gets better. Conley's going to make a huge difference. He's another guy who can create off the dribble, generate offense. Utah did not have that. Between those two and Bogdanovich, Utah's going to be really, really good. I mean, there are some people around the league who think they could be a final contender. I think the Lakers, Clippers, just the overall talent there, the amount of studs that they have, top 10 players they have, going to make that difficult. But like, it's, you know, maybe a good comparison. This is a bit of a cliche. We do this a lot, but they kind of remind me a little bit of the more modern version of that Detroit Pistons team, the Bill F. Ben Wallace with Hamilton, where you have a really good starting five. You have some good scorers. You have a Gobert, who's maybe the best defensive player in the league, man in the middle. Utah is going to be really, really good.
All right, so now let's go flip it back to the East. Here's Philadelphia. Jimmy, now Butler does leave along the way. All right, but Toronto's not going to be Toronto next year. I mean, without Kawhi Leonard. So how do you feel the East stacks? Is it Milwaukee's to still lose? Does Philadelphia make a move up? Where is that list in your mind, Jerome?
I would say Milwaukee and Philly are both the teams to beat. Like, they're kind of in their own little tier there. I would say Milwaukee's to lose for the reason that Giannis is, you know, Giannis is, he's maybe the heir apparent in terms of the best player in the league. Though Kawhi obviously took that last year, even though Giannis was the MVP. He's got to learn to shoot, right? That's what it's going to come down to. We'll see. You saw in the playoffs, you know, against the, when you get deep enough, he can kind of scheme against you. He's got to learn to kind of hit that jumper. It doesn't even have to be a three-pointer. It's just be 18 feet. If he does that, they're going to be great. Losing Brogdon's going to hurt, though. Losing Brogdon's going to hurt a lot. He was up their second best player in the playoffs. Especially with how they're built and the way they have so much Giannis. They rely so much on Giannis for offense generation, offense creation. Brogdon was another guy who could put the ball on the floor a little bit. They're going to miss him. Philly, I'm fascinated by. A lot of people are fascinated by. They essentially to me, in the regular season, I think they'll be great, right? They're going to pass the ball a lot. Horford's great. Their defense is going to be fantastic all season. I'm curious where their – I'm kind of getting repetitive here, right? But where their crunch time offense comes from. Butler was responsible for that in the playoffs. They essentially ran through him. You know, he's still in the Raptors series. Butler was the one who they gave the ball to him, let him clean pick and roll, isolation. They lost that guy. They didn't replace him. They lost Redick, too, which was – he was part of their offense, a big part of their space creation or generating looks for the guys. They lose him. It seems to me they're making a big bet on Ben Simmons. I find that really interesting. It's not one I necessarily would make. You know, to me, it's like, yeah, I'm with you a little bit. You're with me. Yeah, it's just you gotta show we're in year three now. I mean, you missed the first year. We're in year three, I guess, here now, right? Hasn't shown, forget even improvement, he hasn't shown an interest in trying to improve the jumper. To me, that's a problem.
Exactly right. That is a great observation. Exactly right. He hasn't shown an interest in it.
Right, so that's to me, that's an issue. Could be wrong, right? If he comes back and does again, doesn't have to be a three-pointer. Just has to be free throws and, you know, hitting a 15-footer when guys tag off of you. That's fine. To me, he makes it really hard to score in the playoffs. I'm genuinely curious and intrigued how they envision getting offense in the playoffs and creating buckets. So we'll see. So I guess if you ask me to pick now, I would pick Milwaukee as a favorite. Both those teams are really good.
Yeah. All right, so Summer League. I'll admit I watched a little bit of the Mavericks Summer League game the other night because I wanted to see Penn State's Josh Reeves. I watched a little bit of the Pelicans Summer League game the other night, not because of Zion Williamson. Okay, label me one of the eight people in the country that watched it for another reason, but because Tony Carr, and he didn't end up playing in the game. Now the earthquake hits, so it became more interesting. I also thought it was interesting that ESPN was all over the earthquake like a half hour before CNN, but that's a different story. Okay. What is your interest in the Summer League? I mean, what if you had a couple things like, okay, I'm interested, but I've got to always remember it's the Summer League, but what makes you interested?
Yeah, how about this? And I'll be consistent with saying, you know, I'm calling saying people, colleagues don't say I don't know enough. We'll give away the secret. Reporters who come to Summer League watch less Summer League games than people who stay home. It's more walking around talking to people, executive, you know, colleagues, friends, whatever. So yeah, if you can ask me my Summer League opinions, you're better off having a caller if you're paid to use on the Summer League in terms of what you actually saw.
But have you been? Did you go to Paris? Did you go over to the Wynn? That's what I want to know. I want to know what's the good stuff here. The heck with the heck with what's going over Thomas and Mac.
It's the walk between the two arenas. That's the walk. The walk between the two arenas. You know, catching people, seeing who you see. You know, shooting craps at the table. You know, at 1 a.m. That's what it's all about. Who cares about the the pick and roll defense between the Sixers and their 14th guys will be playing
Bingo.
Berlin next year.
Bingo. Finally, not only I have somebody who's connected, but somebody who's honest about it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Are you, okay, big picture now. Okay. In Las Vegas, which the NBA's done a great job getting a real foothold in there. Are you surprised the NHL beat them to a punch on the franchise there?
Good question, right? I guess I'll say yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, the NBA clearly has been, I know they've made this like the unofficial capital court sort of, right? They have the USA, Team USA stuff is here, some league stuff is here, something else I'm forgetting now. But they don't think, I mean, Adam Silver has made it clear he doesn't want to expand, right? That's not if he's kind of asked about that. There's always, every time he has a press conference, there's always some reporter from Seattle going to ask him a question. It's like, remember the NFL Super Bowl media days, and there was always an LA reporter who would ask, like, when's the team coming to LA? Kind of like that with, like, Seattle stuff. And the Adam Silver is very, he's not even dancing around these. Very clear. They like the amount of teams they have now. They don't really have an interest in changing that. So I guess I'll say, yes, you know, he's clearly, like an NBA, I don't know what I call it, NBA foundation here. But no, I mean, I would say Seattle, I would get, I don't know this, but my understanding is that they would sort of be first on this list of cities where if they were to expand, that would be it. But it doesn't seem like expansion is something that's anywhere on the horizon. So.
Yeah. Hey, Yaron, this was great. Really appreciate it very much. Enjoyed it. Can't wait to talk with you again.
Anytime. I enjoy it too, as always.
Yep, Yaron Weitzman, NBA writer, Bleacher Report. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, it was a fun half hour. Well, you know, when I was actually a fun hour, in my preface with Yaron, I meant people who are hosting these shows. I didn't mean the reporters and guests that they have on. In other words, the people that sit in these chairs, they don't go out and go anywhere. Right? How often have you heard me talk about the ability to go out and, quote, get your hands dirty? You got to go out and have contact with the people. Like Yaron's out there, he says the walk between arenas where you're chit-chatting, the GM of the team here, the president there, the coach here, right? That's where you get your information. You find out from the agents who are there what's going on. You rub elbows with them. I mean, and what I do, you're at a football practice. If I have a question for Brent Pry, I can pull him aside at the end of practice and say, Brent, what about that, or what about this guy? To give me a better answer and a better perspective. If you sit in this chair and you don't leave this chair, you're then going to tell everybody that, hey, well, I'm understanding the Knicks are going to get Durant and Kyrie Irving. Okay, well, did the Knicks get either one of the guys? Maybe it's because you don't have any connections, but you're just filling time on the show. What use is that? I mean, so for a couple months, maybe even 3 or 4 months, you can dangle the carrot in front of the audience and get them excited about the possibility that maybe these two guys are going to New York, and you have no earthly idea whatsoever whether they're going to go to New York. It turned out in the end they didn't even have a meeting with them. What's the use of listening to the show that gives you bad info? I don't know. I mean, I guess that's your choice. Like, for example, let's take the Facebook pregame show. No, we don't want to do that, do we, Sean? No.
Tradition unlike any other.
Traditional in what way?
Racked up one click at a time on that bad boy.
Oh, boy. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, great to have you with us on the show today. Look forward to being back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow's the All-Star Game. Trying to whip you into a frenzy for it.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.